From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for Tuesday, the 17th day of January 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. We'll take a look at the ever-important weather forecast in South America, the South American Argentine soybean crop. Corn there, too, has been under a lot of pressure from rainfall, especially over the weekend, and more may be coming. Mark Russo will join us from Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll ask you, as a producer, a farmer, a landowner with soybeans and access to all the information from it, to help out some researchers here on campus. Emerson Nafziger is hoping that you'll provide some information to him. We'll hear more from Emerson as we make our way through this edition of the Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th day of January. We're now joined by Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Thanks, Wayne, for being with us today.
Why, good afternoon, Todd.
I take it, as I watched over the weekend and my Twitter account, or at least the people I follow on Twitter, that are based out of South America, in particular from Argentina, were just deluged with rainfall over the weekend. Maybe some more to come. We'll hear more about that from Mark Russo a bit later. I guess the trade saw that and decided they better move at least the nearby months more than a little higher. Is that really what happened?
Well, that was one of the main factors, of course, Todd. You know, as we look at it here, they're starting to cut. We saw, I think, Cordonera cut. He's seen at least 5 million metric ton cut in the Argentine crop because of the excess rain over the weekend, and that wasn't even all totally in there yet. So, you know, that's it. There's talk that it could go as high as a 7 million metric ton cut for Argentina. Very wet in the central area, dry in the north and south, so you know, it is a problem area, and everybody said it was going to take a weather event to get us a bean rally, and it looks like we're getting both.
Can we sustain the rally is the real question at this point.
Oh, you know, I've been talking to some of the cycle guys, talking with Dan Zwicker and a few of them like that, and he was sort of feeling we could rally towards the end of the month and then maybe sell off a little bit and sort of peak that way, and then another person was saying that they do cycles and it's going to be a little, we're going to top here for a little bit and then turn around and rally into the first of half of February. So some of our cycle traders aren't decided what it should really do. But, you know, if we can actually cut this crop like it is, we could take a shot at that $11 mark basis the March here before it's all over, Todd. And that could be another 30, 40 cents higher.
All right, so for both old and new crop soybeans, and new crop may be a much more difficult run towards that area than old crop, but as we get into that 1050, 1070 range, maybe as far as 11 bucks, I suppose, on, and I would think you were talking about nearby contracts.
Yes.
Should producers be thinking about adding additional sales? Let's say they're, I don't know, 10% sold on their new crop, and if they have anything left on their old crop.
I think, you know, as we work up over the $10 cash mark here, you know, or basically along the way, you've seen in that 1030 to 1050 bracket basis, the new crop beans, if you're only a 10% sold, yes, we'd like to get a little more sold. It can go higher. We can have weather problems too, but those are sure profitable levels to start off with. You know, if you stop and you look back, we've got supposedly a carryout. It was cut 60 million bushels in the government report, but still 420. And we're talking about if these prices are up here, that we could add anywhere from 3 to 5 million acres of beans because they're more profitable in corn if it stays like this. And if we'd put that many acres of beans out there, it would really take a weather problem to get the bean, you know, beans any higher in the fall.
Yeah, so that's sort of the flip side. We put more acres into the United States, you might have to think about new crop soybeans and the total production there, but maybe fewer corn acres at the same point?
At the same time, corn's going to, if we take 5 million acres out of corn or wheat or something along the way, the corn numbers are going to come down as far as production, and hopefully that would help the corn numbers quite a bit. So, you know, got to have a little good, you know, it's bad news one side, maybe it's good news the other side. But all in all, if you've locked in some $10 cash beans, whatever, it isn't going to hurt you to plant a few more acres of them. But if you haven't locked in the beans, why, then switching acres gets a little risky.
Anything on the global front other than what's been happening in South America that we ought to think about? We have Brexit in the UK. We have a brand new president being inaugurated on Friday.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things, President-elect Trump made a comment that the dollar is too high and we're not being competitive, and we're down 3/4 of a point today on that. It seems like when he twitters or whatever, why, it seems to have some effect on the market, and the dollar did set back on that. Of course, the big thing that's not very fun right now is the DDGs. The Chinese have put tariffs on them, which basically stops U.S. DDGs from going into China. And they also, looks like they canceled 7 boatloads of ethanol with the idea that they're going to put some tariffs on the ethanol, too. Both of those bad for the corn industry in the U.S.
Thanks so much. We'll talk with you again in a week.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He joins us here in the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Let's take a look at today's agricultural news. We'll start with something a little closer to home. Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, has posted a new article to the Farm Doc Daily website. Look it up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu about last week's USDA reports. I'll read you the final paragraph. It states, the reports provide support for soybean prices in the short term and are ambivalent for corn prices. Despite lowering corn and soybean ending stocks forecast, one cannot ignore the large crop potential currently unfolding in South America and the implications for U.S. exports in 2017. Corn and soybean prices will reflect the pace of consumption and crop prospects in South America. Todd Hubbs goes on to say corn prices will likely average in the upper range of the USDA's projections through the spring, while soybean prices show the potential for falling into the lower half of the projected range as we move through the marketing year. Todd Hubbs issued that this morning on the Farm Doc Daily website. In other news, in Washington, D.C. this Friday, a new president will be inaugurated in the United States. Most of Trump's cabinet has been put in place, as nominees at least, except for one. The agricultural slot is still open. Last week, the outgoing secretary stepped down. That leaves a big hole. However, Vice President-elect Pence over the weekend suggested that all of the slots would be filled before the January 20th swearing in. On that note, let's stay with the Trump cabinet. The Senate is set for another busy week of confirmation hearings with 8 on the schedule. Trump's pick to head the Interior Department kicks off things today with a hearing before the Energy and Natural Resources Committee. Scott Pruitt, Trump's nominee to lead EPA, is set to face the Environment and Public Works Committee on Wednesday. And Rick Perry, Trump's choice for Energy Secretary, is slated to go before Energy and Natural Resources on Thursday. On a side note, agriculture-related issues are not likely to dominate senators' list of concerns, but expect a lot of interest in Pruitt's stance on ethanol and the waters of the U.S. rule. Speaking of which, the chair of the U.S. House's Environment Subcommittee, Illinois Republican John Shimka, says he'll use all options to kill the Obama EPA's Waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS, still held up in the courts. Shimka acknowledges it's a lot easier for the House GOP majority to pass regulatory reform and repeal measures on party line votes than the Senate, where filibuster rules will force Republicans to secure 60 votes to advance such bills. The House has already passed 3 reform measures, but the Illinois Republican says his panel will take the lead on reining in the EPA and other agencies and dismantling Obama administration rules like WOTUS that he says hampers agriculture, coal production, and other sectors.
Well, we're going to continue to go at it any way we can. Part of the success of a conservative majority was the frustration by the public over the overzealousness of federal agencies. It's really across the board, whether it's the FCC or communications issues, or it's the SEC, or it's the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or it's EPA.
Shimka says moves to rescind the Obama WOTUS rule will win support, even from some rural state Democrats who depend on the farm vote.
There are 7 to 8 senators who are in competitive states And I know one across the Mississippi River from mine that the WOTUS would be hard to oppose.
But Shimkus says the White House will also be very involved, especially on WOTUS, and likely in the courts.
If the administration, and I believe they will, if they decide not to defend the case and it, the case falls apart and doesn't stand, and we can walk away with a victory there, we'd be happy with that, because really, we need to save as much time, especially on the Senate side, for floor time.
Shimkus says Republicans could also use the appropriations process to defund WOTUS, but adds that would only win his side temporary delays of 1 year at a time. And finally today, one last Obama USDA rule. The White House last week finished its review of the final rule on organic animal welfare standards, setting it up to head to the Federal Register this week. It's unclear what changes the department has made since the proposal was issued last summer, but large organic poultry and egg producers especially are unlikely to be happy with anything short of the rule getting scrapped. The Obama administration has until Thursday to have all its remaining rules published. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, a conversation I had with Emerson Nafziger about some research that's not only being done here, but across the whole of the Midwest as it relates to production agriculture and best management practices for soybeans. Emerson, along with many others, are looking to gather data from farmers in their states, in this case, Illinois, to provide information they'll plumb for real field-level impacts from production practices. You can help out by offering up some of your data. We'll hear how that'll happen from Emerson in a moment.
I've had this idea for probably 20 years that if you could gather information on what I did and what yield I got in a 1,000 soybean fields in Illinois, you could develop this thing that says, hey, in this kind of soil and in this kind of weather, and that's the piece that's been added today, everybody has the ability to go to a particular place on the GPS coordinates and say, the weather and the soil are here, this is what's here, and if this is the yield you got, and this is the management you did, then the idea is you make this sort of grand, I don't like the word model very much, but that's really what it is. It's based on what, you know, thousands of fields over years, and you start to get a handle on what planting date and maturity of variety and fungicides and some of these kinds of things actually do to yields under a certain set of conditions. And so this is it's a massive learning tool under development, I guess, and I'm kind of excited about it. It doesn't replace what we're trying to do in some of our replicated research, but it's every field becomes a plot in a system like this. And you say, you know, for these thousands of fields, here's what we did and here's what we got and here's what made a difference in terms of yield. We're talking here today about things I've tried to get done to look at high yields or what makes yields high when the weather is good. We know it takes good weather, and we've had good weather the last 2 years. So it gives us kind of a unique perspective to look at practices under good yielding conditions to see what it takes to move good yields to even better yields.
Would you call this field level research, or is it a field level survey? And it does involve producers and their willingness to fill out information online.
It does, and we're being very careful to make sure that there's never any names attached to any of this. It's both research and sort of a survey. It's using survey data to produce predictions about how we manage in a particular soil in the future. And that's what applied research is always about. We want to predict what will happen when we narrow the rows or increase the seeding rate or add fungicide or do something like this to soybean fields in the future. It's a powerful tool today because we have the computer power and the sensing going on sort of publicly available. We can get weather from any field in Illinois for any given year we can go back and look at the records. It may not be perfect for did this much rain really fall on this corner of this field, but in a general sense, it's something we can do now that we've never been able to do before. And you say, well, why mess with the weather when we can't really predict it anyway? And I'll admit, 30 years ago, I thought we'd be a little better at predicting it than we seem to be, but we're pretty good at describing it. It's also difficult to manage based on weather that is predicted because our predictions aren't very good. And we've all seen this in the years in Illinois. You have people say, well, it's going to be a drier and warmer than normal summer, and it turns out to be the opposite. And we have to be careful not to make decisions that hurt us if those weather predictions don't turn out to be very accurate. And the way you do that is you just have lots and lots of fields with information like this, and you can start to look at the cost and the return to these kinds of practices, even if the weather doesn't come out exactly like predicted. In other words, kind of the theoretical question, if we knew exactly what weather we were going to get, how would we manage, and what will it cost us if we manage that way and don't get the weather we predict? And we certainly have to be ready in every case in Illinois to take advantage of good weather when we get it and not be done in by poor weather when that happens.
So folks that are interested in filling out, farmers that is, that are interested in filling out the survey will need some information from their farms. They can go to bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu and they can see an article there, but they'll go someplace else eventually to fill these out online.
We're keeping it pretty simple at this point. We would like to get at least 500 fields, and the form has room to put information from four fields from an individual farmer. But we would like to get at least 500 fields from the 2014 and 2015 crop years, and then we're going to repeat this in a year and in 2 years, try to get data from the 2016 and 2017 crop years as well. We've taken care here not to make this very burdensome. I suggested in the bulletin note that it might take no more than 5 minutes. I think that's probably accurate if somebody has the records to do it. These things really do run on numbers. If you can't get nearly as many fields as you want, the thing really doesn't have much power when you're done.
That's University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger. I talked with him last year about an initiative to gather data from soybean fields across the state. The effort is part of a larger multi-state North Central soybean research program funded by state checkoff dollars to look at the effects of weather, soils, and management on soybean yields. You can download a PDF file to fill out if you'd like to cooperate. Look for Calling All Soybean Growers. That's the name of the article in the bulletin at bulletin.ipm.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. Mark Russo is now here. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Let's get straight to it, Mark. A lot of rainfall in parts of Argentina over the weekend. Looks like they'll be getting some more. 1 to 4 inches in the primary growing regions. What was the impact?
Now the question becomes, is this active pattern going to continue in Argentina for the remainder of January? And our answer is no. In fact, we're seeing the pattern here turned drier, less active, and warmer across Argentina, as the upper level pattern here is a bit more ridgier in nature, and that's helping to at least cause rainfall to become less frequent, and also that is reducing the higher totals that we've seen with some of these stronger storms. And so overall, the pattern is much less active. And when you add up everything over the next 15 days, in fact, the vast majority of acreage looks to receive below normal rainfall, with the area likely to see closer to normal rainfall is actually far southern Buenos Aires and La Pampa, which is the one area that has not seen the heavier rainfall and, in fact, is running a precip deficit over the past 30 days.
So all in all, kind of a stressful season for soybeans. They're in midsummer in Argentina. Parts of Brazil are actually beginning their harvest. Can you tell me about conditions throughout that region?
Yeah, where soybean harvesting is taking place, Todd, in Brazil, that the focus is in Mato Grosso. And the pattern here in recent weeks has featured below normal rainfall there. That's helped for a really good start to the harvest season. The pattern is turning more active, but a resumption of near normal rainfall totals, not only in Mato Grosso, but eastward, some of the areas of Goiás, Bahia, into Minas Gerais. So this could result in a few delays in harvest progress, but we're not seeing a wetter than normal pattern that would bog down harvest progress. And then in the northeastern areas of Brazil that have been on the dry side, in some cases areas that have received less than 25% of normal rainfall over the past 30 days, those areas will be seeing a marked increase in rain. In fact, we've already seen that in recent days, so that will help improve the situation in northeastern Brazil.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark.
You're welcome, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Tuesday afternoon. Find us online at WILLAG.org.